Welcome to Gluck Radio. I am Dr. Errol Gluck, executive life coach and master problem solver. Based upon Carl Jung's extroversion and introversion theory, people are split into two categories. People are either introverts or extroverts. Introverts are stereotyped to be shy, poor conversationalists, loners, depressed, not many friends, kind of geeks, and at the worst, serial killers. Whereas extroverts are stereotyped to be outgoing, sociable, talkable, energetic, the need to be at the center of attention and live off being around a lot of people. In line with these stereotypes, it is expected that introverts are not natural entrepreneurs. In such an extroverted society like America, however, Bill Gates, Larry Page, Mark Zuckerberg, Charles Schwab, Steven Spielberg, Michael Jordan, and Julia Robbins, just to name a few, are leading entrepreneurs, role models that have stood out and changed America, and guess what? They're introverts. With us today is Beth Bulow, a professional coach that works with introvert business leaders from all over the world. She is wonderful. Beth, welcome. What can I say? Your book is a have-to-read, and there's so many interesting things in this that everyone is going to see part of themselves, their whole self, or whatever the case might be. Now, before we start, are you an introvert?
Absolutely, I am. I kind of self-diagnosed. Oops, sorry about that. Let me try that again.
Oh, you could do that all day. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I actually, self-diagnosed myself when I was in graduate school, when I was playing around on the internet when it was still pretty young, and found a Myers-Briggs online assessment and came out an introvert. And it was fantastic to be able to put a word to something that I already knew and then to find out what the real definition was.
Absolutely, because when most people think of introvert, they think of someone who simply is awkward and incompetent as opposed to the way they process, right?
Exactly. They usually, and what I found as I talk to people is the first word that comes to mind is shy. And they I think they have that impression because we are, not as verbal, not as, don't have, scads of friends and all of that. You know, we have as many friends as we want. and it's really about how we process information and how we recharge our batteries.
Oh, I mean, most people would not understand that a great introvert was Ronald Reagan. Extremely introverted, didn't really have any friends, was probably the most sociable president we ever had, but everything was processed from within. When I went home last night, I said to my wife, what am I, an introvert or extrovert? She says, you're an extrovert. And I said, how much time, because I'm very outgoing, the life of the party kind of guy, how much time do I self-reflect and tend to get all my information from my own mind after observing and interacting? So I'm kind of like a hybrid, a little gas, a little electricity, a little bit of both.
And we have a word for that, ambivert.
I am an ambivert. Now you gave me, the definition that I could, ambivert. Okay, now I know what I am. Explain the thing you just said. And actually I have it in my notes, how a person gains or drains energy and how they process information. How does an introvert or an extrovert gain, or what drains their energy, and how do they process? What's the difference?
Yeah, so introverts gain energy in solitude, in lower stimulation environments, which often means solitude, but it doesn't necessarily have to mean that. They'll say, I gain energy when I'm just talking with one other friend, or I'm spending time with my family, or taking a walk out in the woods, or being alone in a crowd. Those are things that can energize an introvert. And we drain energy during social interaction and higher stimulation environments. So that's, I think, where that whole, shy, reserved, aloof kind of stereotype comes in. Because when we go to those, you know, we go to the party or we go to a networking event or the family reunion, we can be, you know, holding back a little bit, or at least it can appear that way. And it's because those events take a lot of our energy. We have to project a lot of energy. And so in order to do those things, we need to make sure that we have spent that time in solitude or lower stimulation. That's what gives us the energy to be able to go out and do those more social activities. And while I don't like to necessarily polarize or think of extrovert as the opposite, because we're all on a spectrum, for simplicity's sake, to say that an extrovert gains energy through social interaction and drains energy when left, you know, to their own devices for a little bit too long. And don't have, you know, if they don't have enough stimulation, then their energy will really go down. So they get recharged by talking with people, by bouncing off ideas, by, you know, just that social interaction.
Now, we have very similar professions. We're both executive coaches. I add a little bit of neuroplasticity or hypnosis, but I get a lot of energy from my one-on-one dealings with the different people that I deal with to get their lives together. But when I'm speaking at speaking engagements, and I'm very comfortable in speaking or TV or radio, but I get bored very easy. And then after I speak, I mingle a little bit and I want to just leave. Okay. So would that be the ambivert, what the hell, whatever I'm supposed to be?
It probably would be. I mean, you know, I think there might be a slight difference between boredom and feeling sapped of energy. Like an introvert
I'm not sapped of energy. I'm just bored.
Right. Well, an introvert, whoops, sorry about that. Let me say that again. So an introvert will leave because they're zapped of energy. So it's not so much that boredom. And so I think that might be where the ambivert might be coming in a little bit, because boredom is somewhere maybe between, like, I really want to stay and like talk to all these people and seek out the stimulation, versus I'm really zapped and I need to go back to my room and recharge. You know, you're still probably wanting to seek out something, like you're not getting the stimulation that you're craving. And so where are you going to go for that? And it's not going to be where you were, but it's going to be someplace else. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And I would qualify that if there's some business to be done there or someone to help, I don't mind staying. But
sure.
I'm not a small talker. I like to talk about things that have substance. I'm not like, how was your day?
Right. You know, so. And that's a very introvert trait generally. It's almost across the board. Your typical introvert will say, I despise small talk.
Oh, okay. So. There you go. So I am, you know, I come from both sides.
You got a foot in both worlds.
I always knew I had a foot in both worlds. Beth, tell me, your husband is an introvert, correct?
He is.
Okay. Yeah. How do you guys talk? Do you like just mind, you know, send each other messages psychically? What's the story?
We actually, you know, we've been married 17 and a half years, and I think there is an occasional mind meld that does happen. We call it, we have little acronyms, and so we say WASM, which stands for We Are So Married.
That's so cute. That is really, actually, that you have now redefined what marriage should be. WASA.
WASM. We are so married. Because we'll one of us will be thinking something, and then the other person will say something related to that, even though that topic had not been in the air before.
So let's let's dispel a myth, okay? And this is one of my favorite expressions. Opposites attract, and they go on killing each other. But people who are similar actually get along better for the long term. Meaning introverts being with introverts, I think, make for an amazing marriage. Introverts with extroverts, you got to work on it.
There's a lot of work. And I think that there's, you know, I mean, we've found, I'm so grateful to be married to an introvert because, yeah, we get each other. We don't have to explain if we need some time to ourselves or if we'd rather, you know, rather than be interacting, one of our favorite things is just to be able to be alone together, you know, to be in the same room and maybe doing our own thing like reading or.
No, I get that. I get that completely. Yeah.
But it's totally a gift. And I've heard, you know, when you've got the introvert extrovert, I think the key is that you have each of you has a healthy relationship with whichever energy you have. and that you're able to talk about it. Because if you don't talk about it, then yeah, obviously it's such a simple thing, but it can cause so much tension and so many miscommunications, misinterpretations of behavior.
Yeah, I think that when one is an introvert or introspective, they also measure their words a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in fact, I'm going to ask this question, but before I do, give our audience some examples of people who are introverts who they would never have thought.
Oh, well, for that, I would go kind of to the celebrity side, and that would be people like Julia Roberts or Kate Blanchett or Harrison Ford, Tom Hanks, David Letterman, Jerry Seinfeld. You know, you go to a lot of comedians that are actually introverts. You know, these people that you think would be really fed by the crowd and fed by activity and action and being the center of attention, when in reality, you know, I think it goes to, you know, what that part of the definition we were talking about before with processing internally. And
I would probably even say Bill Gates to some degree, Steve Jobs,
yeah,
outside
Gates,
of his
absolutely.
Narcissism.
Yep. Yeah, so, which is a completely different topic in
general. It is, but I just had to throw that in, Steve, wherever you are.
yes, but absolutely. You know, Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg, you know, those folks are all acknowledged, you know, and self-admitted introverts. Warren Buffett is another one who has spoken about that.
No, absolutely. And a man with $70 billion and lives in the same home, I would say, is an introvert.
Yeah.
Winston
and if that's
Churchill.
Right, you can afford to be an introvert.
Oh, Winston Churchill, actually.
I think. I'm not sure, though. I could be wrong on that.
That could be right. Okay. It's pretty surprising. And when you look back at Princess Diana or Gandhi, you know, folks like that. Some people, it goes back and forth with Martin Luther King Jr. You know, there are some people that are really hard to pin down.
Well, they're probably more like me. They have a little bit of both.
Yeah, exactly. And I always think of, you know, we have a core, like I'm a core introvert, but I have cultivated some extroverted skills that can make me look like I'm an extrovert, but I'm really not. And they bring me more towards being in that ambivert space.
So if you have a choice of eating with your husband alone or eating with best friends and your husband alone, who would you choose?
That's not fair.
You already answered the question. You know that. You know, the moment I asked the question, you answered it. Your husband. If your friends are listening, she doesn't really mean it. She does. Anyway, so give us the four strengths of introvert and explain it to us. I'll start you off self-effacing. What does it mean?
Self-effacing means that we tend not to want to be in the spotlight and be, you know, like saying, look at me, and give me all the credit for everything. I think self-effacing is the healthy side of self-deprecating. We've heard people, you know, self-deprecate would say, oh, it was nothing, and no, it wasn't me. But I think introverts can take the credit. It's just that they do it in such a way that is has some humility and humbleness to it. So we are more inclusive, I suppose, or we can be inclusive with when we're giving people credit and bringing people into things.
Meaning, to some degree, ambitious, but for the company or the betterment of the whole
right.
rather than self?
Exactly. So some people think introverts aren't driven or motivated or ambitious, and they absolutely are and can be, and especially those that identify as entrepreneurs. It's simply that it is ambition for the service that they're doing or the company that they're building or the people that they're serving, not so much for personal glory.
Okay. And this is, you know, I want to underline this to all our listeners. Introvert is not a medical disorder. It is a personality
exactly.
type. And very
exactly.
often they'll say, well, this person has a problem. Well, maybe the problem is they don't like small talk and that's all you do.
Right. Yeah,
not stimulating.
Yeah, and there was a movement for a little while to in the DSM-5. I think is that's the most recent.
That you have to remember, if you correct. Start from the DSM-1, the depression is not curable. It still says not and homosexuality.
Really?
Oh yeah, I mean the DSM is so screwed up. It's not even funny.
Yeah,
because introvert was a problem in the early DSMs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think even as early as the latest one, the DSM-5, there was talk of making, you know, still putting it in there as something that needed to be fixed in some way, that it was a problem or a signal of depression or, you know, a very inappropriate tying together. And fortunately, it was that was eliminated. So
thank God. You know, I mean, I just these studies that come out, Beth, you know, we could do a show on that. I just coming up in the elevator to my office today, they had a study that those who drink their coffee black are sociopaths and most likely to be psychopaths. I drink my coffee black. Well,
so
maybe that's not a good, you know.
But, well, I've even heard, like, if you have an aversion to lemon, you know, a lemon flavor, that you're an introvert. And I'm like, what? That is, you know, there's some pretty crazy things out there. So I think, you know, anybody who's listening and is wanting to dive deeper into this, to take a lot of things with a grain of salt, you know,
exactly.
Do some cross-checking and, you know.
So the second strength you have down here is self-reliant, and then you have
That's
self-possessed
right.
and self-reflective. Explain each one.
Yeah, so self-reliant, we tend to be, you know, pretty independent, and we look internally for our energy sources. So that means that, you know, I like to say we're often our own best friend. And we're not dependent on external stimulation or external motivation or validation when it comes to kind of deciding what to do or knowing what's right. It doesn't mean that we don't take into account things that are around us, but our internal barometer is what we mainly depend on. And then self-possessed, I think, it goes along with self-reliance. And it has to do with being generally composed and poised. You know, I think of the phrase calm, cool, collected is probably something that can be, you know, associated generally with an introvert, because we're doing that internal processing and, you know, really checking in with our internal barometer.
Well, for self-possessed, you wrote in full control of thoughts and feelings, right?
Yeah, you can control your feelings and you can be very poised about them. It can have a flip side where people think that you're not being expressive enough, or they, you know, don't understand what you might be thinking and feeling. So that's something that introverts need to be very aware of and be able to communicate, you know, what's going on, if you know, so they don't get too self-possessed. But it is a strength, especially in times of crisis or confusion or change. And then finally, self-reflective, you know, that goes back to what we've been talking about with being internal processors. We tend to be thinkers. We tend to want to take in information and think about it before coming to conclusions and sharing about it. So, you know, one of the things that differentiates introverts and extroverts is that extroverts tend to be external processors. So they're verbally processing things.
Now, do they take information from others? Do they take counsel from others?
Yeah.
They do. Because that would concern me if they were not able to take in other people's opinion, can they be strong leaders? And you answered the question, they can do that.
And when you say they, do you mean introverts or extroverts?
Introverts.
Introverts. Yes, introverts will take counsel from others. It's simply that they will gather the information and then probably want to take it away and process it, as opposed to an extrovert who would say, give me information and let's process it together in a group. So that would be the kind of the main difference between how they would take in information and what they would do with it.
Talk to me about fears. What is the difference between the fears of an extrovert and an introvert? Now, and I'm going to throw out for myself, I think that fear, because it's midbrain, mammal brain, that the mm-hmm. fears are the same in terms of the fear of rejection, the fear of embarrassment, the fear of failure. Mm-hmm. So I think that they share the same fears, but I want to know what you think.
I think they do share the same fears, and the same things will trigger fear in both introverts and extroverts. I think the difference is their relationship to it and how they process it.
Explain.
So as we've been saying, you know, the extrovert is an external processor. So when they're feeling fear or feeling an emotion, they're more likely to reach out to other people and be able to express that verbally and you know, maybe brainstorm or problem solve with somebody else and work through it that way. Whereas an introvert will internalize it a little bit more. They will, you know, I will hold on to it. If I'm feeling fear or discomfort or doubts, I'm less likely to like pick up the phone or reach out to somebody and say, hey, you know, I want to share what I'm feeling and see what you think. I'm more likely to just like keep it kind of stuffed inside, you know, on the extreme level and not express it to anybody.
So who will you tell your deepest, darkest secrets to?
Besides my husband.
Oh, so you will your husband?
I will my husband, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I do have a good friend who also happens to be an introvert. And, you know, I think we all need that one person in our lives that we can say absolutely anything to, and she's that person for me.
I actually have that. It's my dog, Socrates.
Yes.
He absolutely has never, ever spilled anything when I told him.
And he doesn't give you unsolicited advice either.
Oh, no. Well, sometimes he makes me walk him when I don't want to or feed him.
Right.
You know, but other than that, he's cool.
Yeah.
So you give a quote here, which actually I read and I reread and I so loved it. So everyone has to have this. You said your favorite quote is, "Fear knocked on the door, mm-hmm. love answered, and no one was there." Explain this.
That's an old English proverb, and it means that, you know, when we at a fundamental level, we have two emotions. Like, you can boil everything down to love or fear. And love is the antidote to fear. So it's just like, you know, if you're feeling that fear, if you're able to answer it with love, love can cancel it out. Love is something that's coming from that more positive and affirming and just centered, true place.
For those who are Bible scholars, there's actually a verse that says, perfect mm-hmm. love casts out fear, for fear has torment.
Oh,
so you're
right.
actually quoting you're giving a beautiful picture of that particular verse.
Yeah. Isn't it lovely that if you can answer the door, if you can answer that fear, that knock with love, you're not going to completely banish the fear, right? It's, you know, fear is just something that can float around, actually
you can, because fear is mammal brain. The frontal lobe, the rational cognitive brain, doesn't have fear. So it's the rewiring process. That's the whole neuroplasticity. So, but you come up with words. Tell everyone what funds are. F.U.D. What is a fund? It's not something you invest in. So what is it?
A FUD is, exactly. FUD, yep. It stands for fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And it was a phrase or an acronym coined back in the 1980s by an IBM marketing executive. And
so
the
say
idea
it again,
was
fear?
That.
Fear? And what's
say,
the U?
It's around the, it, say that again?
No, yeah. What does it stand for again?
It stands for fear, uncertainty,
and doubt.
Doubt.
Got it.
Doubt.
It was coined by IBM guy.
Yep, an IBM guy back in the 1980s. And the idea was that from a marketing perspective, they wanted to instill fear, uncertainty, and doubt in the minds of their customers so that they would stay with them. They were saying like, well, if you go with the other company, you don't know what you're going to get. So it's kind of a, you know, stay with the devil you know. And so very fear-driven marketing. And we tend to see that these days. We see it in politics. We see it in other, you know, corporate marketing kinds of settings and whatnot. And I just liked that, you know, FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. It was just kind of a little bit of a playful way to be thinking about what are the fears, uncertainty, and doubts that come up for you. And when are you yourself being driven by fear?
And also probably the next question is, what love can you use or what part of your brain could you use so that fear, which is intensely, fear to me is like a lottery ticket. You have one in a billion chances of winning, but you're still thinking about it. And, you know, it's like people have fear of dying in airplanes when the amount of people who actually fly every day, it's like winning the lotto.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there's always that putting that into perspective. And another source that I really love is Susan Jeffers' book back from, I think it's from the 90s, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And, you know, she talks about that usually at the root of fear is no matter what it is that you are feeling afraid of, it's that you can't handle what happens.
Right.
Like if,
right.
I've obviously
came across all those books and read them, but it is my objection would be the belief that fear cannot be eliminated, which it can. Okay. So that would probably have a difference for that. I know you hate, by the way, the motto "fake it till you make it." Why do you hate it, and what does it mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is that it's you're being something that you're not, and I think it's possible to own who you are and then come from that place, and it's going to look different than other people, and that's fine. I think if we're faking it, that means we're trying to imitate somebody else. We're trying to, exaggerate or be something else. And, it comes from a false place. And they've done studies, it's one of the things I share in the book, that when people are able to come from a more genuine, you might manufacture the emotion, but it's coming from something from you. So if I want to feel a little bit more outgoing, or I want to feel happier, if I can conjure up a memory or a feeling inside of me of saying, if I think of my dog and my dog makes me happy, then that kind of lifts my spirits a little bit, rather than trying to fake it and say, well, I just need to plaster that smile on my face. And I know that there are conflicting, views about this. And I'm sure that there are people who are listening and I don't agree at all. But
here's what I would say. And this is the guy who's in the middle. What am I again? An
ambivert.
I'm an ambivert. Okay, next time my wife calls me other names. No, I'm not a schmuck. I'm an ambivert. Okay? Just call up and, listen to Beth and she'll tell you. Fake it till you make it is not something you want to walk into a hospital and your brain surgeon has as a plaque. Okay? I mean, that would really go down. So you don't want to fake it till you make it if it affects other people. Now, the opposite end of that story is that when you go to an interview, you may wear a suit and a tie that you can't afford, but you want to present yourself as a salesperson as I have what it takes. And in that case, fake it till you make it might be incredibly relevant and something you need to do. So that's
I just want to jump in and say, I don't know if, though wearing a suit at the interview is necessarily faking it. I think if you go into the interview and you are kind of over the top in terms of your personality and that's not naturally you, that's kind of faking it, because then what happens is you get the job. And how do you sustain that?
Obviously fake it till you make it can mean do what you need to do to get the job. But some jobs, like sales, then at that point, you could get a lot of coaching and a lot of, a lot of reading and bring yourself up to speed, because people see what you present. And now there are other things, you're right. If you take something on that you can't really produce, eventually it's going to create a lot of stress, yourself, and you're going to feel like a fraud. And one of the biggest things that executives suffer from is I term TID, which is temporary identity disorder. They really feel like an imposter.
Yeah, you get that imposter syndrome where you say, I'm eventually going to be found out.
Exactly. And lots of people have that because of fake it till you make it.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, let's talk about this was also something I loved. I loved a lot of things in your book, my goodness. Networking seems to be the hardest things for introverts. Why?
It requires such a huge projection of energy. Now, networking can be uncomfortable for extroverts as well. It's not something that's just the exclusive domain. People in general, like you walk into a room full of people that you don't know and you don't know where to start. It feels a little unsafe. And so, especially for the introvert, because we're already, maybe perhaps overstimulated by the environment and the whole idea of connecting with people and whatnot, that it makes it, I think, a little bit extra stressful when it really doesn't have to be that way.
No, it doesn't. Now, shouldn't the introvert say, who the hell cares what they think? I'm here to process information, to observe, and if they don't like it, they can lump it.
And there's a certain amount of truth to that, because what I think people have to remember, especially introverts, is that if you're going to a networking event, everybody's there to do the same thing. You're not bothering somebody if you walk up to them and introduce yourself. You're not a burden if you're sharing, the story of your business, unless, the person looks like they're about to fall asleep. It's everybody's there for the same purpose of making connections. And so if you could remember that, then it makes it a little bit easier. It's like you've been given permission to do those things, and it's okay. You have to remember most people in the room don't know each other. And if you can remember that, then it puts things into that perspective and makes it a little less scary.
You know, one of the ways I would phrase it, you know, I'm in New York, the city, and if it snows a half an inch, everyone panics. But when it snows 3 feet, everyone is calm.
Yeah.
So the recognition that everyone is kind of in the same boat to some extent just kind of calm everything down.
Exactly.
You know? And you could always go up to someone and say, listen, I want to explain how my business has nothing to do with yours. But, you know, it's a good conversation.
Yeah.
So that brings me to my next question, Beth. Tell me about introvert humor. What kind of jokes do introverts tell?
Oh, that's a good question.
Give me a joke, Beth.
Give you a joke? Okay. So how many introverts does it take to change a light bulb?
None. When the light bulb is ready, it'll change itself.
Well, none. Yes, none. Because having the lights on just makes more people come and visit.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. And then there's another. I can tell you one more light bulb joke.
Oh yeah, go another introvert joke.
Okay. So how many introverts does it take to change a light bulb?
Oh, you had another one.
Yep.
Okay,
so
tell me
one. One. Why does everything have to be? Why does everything have to be a group activity?
Mm. Oh, there you go.
I know.
I like that. I absolutely like that.
Aren't they?
Coffee table book.
I think so. I thought about, you know, there needs to be a stand-up routine.
Do you know an extrovert joke?
I don't.
I'll give you one.
Fall out of the tree. Why?
Because it was dead.
The
extrovert, you know, actually doesn't really care very much what anyone thinks. So they'll just, you know, it's a little humor. So you obviously have been at meetings, lectures. Do you also give lectures?
I do. I hope they're not too much of a lecture, but yes, presentations.
That is it nerve-wracking for you? Or could you do it pretty easy?
I do it pretty easy. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a pretty comfortable space.
So why, as an introvert, why is it easy to talk to a whole group of people?
Because I have had a chance to prepare. One hopes that I'm in control. You know, I've been granted the floor. You know, it's so much easier to be the leader of the group than part of the group, because there's an expectation that I'm setting the tone, I'm setting the pace, I'm in command of my subject. You know, if I'm giving a presentation, people are there, I hope to, you know, because they're interested in what I have to say. So I don't have to fight or jockey with other people to get people's attention. So it's just a much more comfortable space potentially to be in.
I actually like that. I also think, and I don't know if this is the truth, but I would think that introverts are much better students in school.
There does tend to be, I think there are some studies that say that introverts tend to be among the gifted and talented, if they still use that phrase, of the students, or, you know, the kind of higher achievers, because they are studying, they're staying focused on their work and their homework. And it's not so much about social activities and whatnot, but it's about like doing the work.
Right. Right. And is it frustrating for an introvert who went to school, got a PhD in psychology, and is making $80,000 working, you know, for the state, as opposed to the guy that left, you know, the extrovert who graduated high school and opened up a concrete business and now is worth, you know, $200 million? Is that frustrating?
I don't know. You mean frustrating if I think about it, or frustrating to the introvert?
Think about it. Like, are introverts, like, do they get jealous?
I don't think so. I think the thing is that introverts have to remember that, you know, anytime. So if you were to Google perfect jobs for introverts, most of the jobs that you pull up that people suggest are
Park ranges? No, what?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like animal vet, yoga teacher, you know, accountant, you know, mortician. I mean, you know, there are all these things that tend to be like, but you know, completely removed from people. And that is not necessarily what an introvert would like to do as a profession. Those two things don't necessarily go together. And so I think an introvert can be whatever an introvert wants to be. It's up to them. And the key is, you know, finding that right balance to make sure that you're not burning yourself out.
So would you say that introverts should learn from extroverts and try to move some things in the middle?
I think that there are some skills that extroverts have that are beneficial to introverts, especially in the United States, because we're a very extroverted society. And when I say that, it's not because there are more extroverts. It's simply because we tend to value the traits that extroverts exhibit. And so an introvert can, you know, I think if we learn to treat like I said in the beginning, we all are on a spectrum, right? So even as an introvert, I have extrovert energy. If you considered yourself a full-on extrovert, even you would have introvert energy.
Oh, no, I'm in the middle. I like that.
You like the middle. Okay.
Oh my God. You know, you just gave me my new title. I'm going to add it to my card.
Yeah. But so let's say you have that, you know, raging extrovert, even they have some introvert energy. So the key is to tap into that, you know, and cultivate that. So I have, you know, cultivated some skills that allow me to achieve what I want, such as verbally processing. Like you and I are having this conversation. I didn't get the questions in advance, right?
Right, and I make up things as I go along, even though Julie, my office manager, she put these questions together, and for the record, she's the best.
That's awesome.
Office manager I ever had.
Just tell us she did a great job.
Oh, she always does.
And so what we're actually demonstrating right here is that, you know, I have cultivated that skill of being able to verbally process, because it's not the most comfortable thing. And I feel almost astounded if something intelligent comes out of my mouth when I didn't know what I was going to be asked.
Oh, okay. So, you know, so you and Trump have something together.
Oh, please. I don't know if I want to go there.
I don't want to go there either. So don't worry about it. The last question I'm going to ask, you're so much fun. I wish we could go on forever. We're usually told to step out of our comfort zones.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good, bad, and how does an extrovert step out of his or her comfort zone?
How does an introvert step out, right?
Yeah.
So comfort zones. This is my, I think this is a side crusade. You know, comfort zone is a place where you feel safe and secure and that you don't feel stress. And yet in society, we have tended to really give our comfort zones a bad rap. Like if you stay in your comfort zone or you spend time in your comfort zone, then you are not growing, or you're stagnant, or, you know, you're growing cobwebs. And, you know, the truth is, I think for introverts, the comfort zone is a very important place. It's a place where you recharge. You know, I think of it as like a landing pad and a launching pad at the same time. So introverts, you know, I think we need to embrace our comfort zones. I think we need to figure out what are those places where we feel safe, secure, and low stress, and be able to go to those places and be able to synthesize and process and connect dots that, and we can do that in a much more productive way and in a way that feels good when we're not being bombarded with stimulation.
I really like that. I would add one, you know, more thing. If you're looking at life through your frontal lobe, just the way you have your own fingerprint, tongue print, iris print, you have your own identity. And knowing that you could bring that identity with you wherever you go gives you the ability to bring home with you. And therefore, and you gather a lot of information. And by the way, just for the record, everyone out there, all the millions who are going to listen, we want everyone who's running to read this book. If you don't read this book, you're going to lose. Okay?
Aww.
So, because this is great for this new debate. Beth, you're not only wrote a great book, you're just a wonderful person, and I really enjoyed having our talk together today.
Oh, thank you so much. I've enjoyed it immensely.
You have an amazing day, and we will make sure that everyone picks up a copy of your book and just enjoy the day. And I love what you said that about your husband. Tell him he's a lucky man.
I will. Thank you.
Bye, Beth.
Thanks, Beth.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.
I want to once again thank Beth Bulow for joining us today. You must pick up her copy of a book, The Introvert Entrepreneur, on Amazon or your local Barnes & Noble store. I am Dr. Errol Gluck. Remember, to every problem there is a solution. You're going to not only want to check out our other episodes on Gluck Radio and tune in on YouTube. Just search for Errol Gluck on YouTube, and that's how you'll find us. You're going to visit our website, glucksolutions.org, and see how executive life coaching coupled with neuroplasticity, which hypnosis is based on it, will change your life. Thanks for listening. Till next time, and spread the word.